Turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves.
Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Kuhn. I'm streaming live on my own Facebook page because I had time to do that today. I don't know. I was just like bumping around trying to avoid the Eli's cheesecake in the kitchen. And, you know, did you get any cheesecake?
I did not, but Jen was telling me all about it. So
it smells amazing. I looked at it. It's nut free, so the wife can have some. She said no. She's smart too. I guess we're just going to settle for Shamrock Shakes later. You can't not. I mean, it's St. Patrick's Day. The river's flowing green, which is good for everyone, right? Is it? No, it's not actually. It's not good for the environment. It's probably not good for anybody. But the drinks are flowing, and I'm drinking coffee, no booze. So I hope to change that soon.
Yeah, not yet.
Not until mother's dinner. Yeah, lovely mother. I'm going to have drinks before dinner, so don't judge. All right, we got a great show, as I mentioned. We're going to jump right into the Startup Showcase, which I feel like we should do more often. We should just jump right to the showcase. I mean, what's all the talk about anyway? Sam Park, CEO of Sapien Industries, just to give you a plug here, he's going to tell us about the company. It's using machine learning to eliminate energy waste. We're using green dye to make a different kind of environmental waste. He's trying to solve energy waste problems. Here's the kicker. On Republic, you can go to republic.co/sapient. They've raised over $356,000 already, which is 1,400% of their goal. 45 days left to go. So I'm really excited, actually, to hear Sam's pitch, because that is, while a lot of companies raise a lot of money like that, they don't raise it that fast. And so there's got to be something here that is on the race. So without further ado, Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we're going to make it quick. I know you got to jump on a flight. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to have you pitch a 1-minute pitch of exactly what Sapien is, does, how it works, etc. And then I want to pepper you with some questions and see why you are kicking butt right now.
Got it.
Sweet.
Cool.
All right, go ahead.
So we're solving the problem that is about a third of the energy consumed by your average commercial building is completely invisible. And that third is plug load, actually, the plug load of the building, or the energy that's consumed by all the devices plugged into electrical outlets. So we solve that problem by taking off-the-shelf smart outlets, actually, like the ones that you would put in your home, and we equip them with a high-power analytical dashboard for facilities managers and building owners that's capable, actually, of understanding the types of devices that are plugged in using machine learning. And with that information, we can actually automate efficient behaviors for the thousands of devices in a building. And for our pricing, we adopted a hardware as a service model that involves a small one-time activation fee followed by an annual subscription fee. And it actually keeps overall costs of the system so low for our customers that we overcame an industry standard year and a half sales cycle for property tech with a sales cycle that today averages about 6 weeks. So because of that, I think that's a big reason why we've gone from about 5 buildings in our sales pipeline to over 100,000 in the last few months.
Awesome. So if I get this right, you know, this is sort of like IT management for energy. So like there's a bunch of startups in Chicago. Genuity is one that goes to mind, as well as many others, Freshworks and others that are in the IT space, where they basically have a dashboard for people to manage the usage and what tools and what equipment and all that other kind of stuff. But yours is focused on energy, which if you're in a big city like Chicago, you see the buildings that have that sort of green label, as in that they're energy efficient. If you were just to look at all of the major buildings and developments across the globe, just saving energy there has to make a gigantic impact on the world from that standpoint. But then from a business standpoint, I think people forget that not only is the property manager and the owner have to pay a ton of money for wasted energy, but they save a ton of money if the buildings are green. And even more, those expenses ultimately get passed through to the tenants. So if you're looking for a space, being, you know, whether you're a big company or not, it really is advantageous if you know what you're doing. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, we've found, pretty surprisingly, actually, we thought that our conversations were going to be centered around how much are we going to reduce your energy bill, which we do a really good job of. We reduce plug load by about 30% just from turning off devices that should be off. But that ends up only being a check mark, actually, in the conversation. We start with that. They say, is it going to save me? When am I going to have it paid off? We tell them, you know, 2 to 3 months, probably. And then after that, 90% of the conversation is, what else can I do with this information, actually? Because no one's ever metered this before. No one's ever had high fidelity information about the way that the people in their building consume. You know, people have had occupancy numbers for a while now, and people have had building-wide energy measurements and sort of demand prediction for a while now, and there are great companies out there doing that, but the information that is how do people consume with the thousands of devices in a building, it's totally new. So there are even opportunities for savings that we haven't even seen yet.
It's funny you mention that. Like, the other part of this that comes to mind is sort of the invisible part. You mentioned 36% of energy is consumed by buildings completely invisible. And I don't think that, I mean, maybe you calculated this in, but I don't think that even includes, or at least from a knowledge standpoint, when I go into our office on the weekend, the TVs and stuff are still on. And the amount of wasted stuff that beyond like the major stuff, just the little stuff, the amount of stuff that's wasted because we don't know, A, that there's a way to calculate and to monitor, and B, we're not monitoring, so who cares, right? So
exactly. Yep.
I think if you instituted something like this in your business, like anything else, we have another company calling in to talk after this who helps companies control their spending called Procurify. And it's totally unrelated to your business, but what I recognize in these type of programs is that if you start, you set a baseline, and from there on you recognize how to make that baseline go up or down, you become way more aware of your use case. And so, like, the building itself will be more optimized, but you as the person in the office will be like, oh man, I don't want to be that selfish person who ends up, you know, leaving all the TVs and lights on because who cares? So there's like
a
bigger impact on this in addition to just the obvious.
Yeah. It's really surprising. I mean, we have customers that have, one in particular had 40 3D printers for a co-working space. And as far as they were concerned, they were buying filament for those printers, so therefore they were needed, which was a false assumption. We found that they needed 6. So they just canceled the lease and saved tens of thousands of dollars on those 3D printers. They never would have known that. So there are lots of different kinds of waste. And like you mentioned with those TVs, a lot of times, you know, in these big commercial office buildings, you've got hundreds of cubicles, and you have no way of knowing whether you need all of those. And it's kind of alarming. That you know so little about the things that are used in a building, you know, we can reduce the energy bill, but probably more importantly, we can improve overall operating efficiency.
So from a business standpoint, we're coming up against the clock here, but from a business standpoint, your contract value is up 1,800%, booked revenue 21,000% increase for last quarter. You've got 48,000 buildings in the sales pipeline with more than $1 billion in potential annual recurring revenue. If you were successful at raising this campaign, where does that money go? What do you need to do to make this thing even bigger?
Yeah, so actually, that 48,000, we just recently doubled that last week.
That's a $3 billion opportunity now.
Yeah, yes. So, which is really exciting. This round, which we will be announcing the details of at the completion of Republic, that's used to build out all the bells and whistles that make scaling and installation easy. So theoretically, when we finish this round and finish a few key pieces of technology, we'll be able to scale at the rate of a SaaS platform, but, you know, as a hardware company, because all we'll have to do is ship hardware to the site. So that's the goal for this round.
Very cool. I love what you're doing. Keep it up. Keep us in the know of how this is going, because I'm obviously working in downtown Chicago. We see tons of buildings. I was just in one yesterday where obviously Tempus and Lightbank and Groupon, all those are headquartered, and it's a green building as well. And I just think that for all of these buildings, if they could spend less money on wasted use and more money on creating a community base there, people would enjoy their time at work more. And there's just a whole lot of opportunities. And we like to hang our hat on like these really, really robust, obvious things that we could make one change here, this would happen. But the reality is any major impactful change in the world happens one small thing at a time. And you create an opportunity for businesses and buildings themselves to be that sort of beginning part. So kudos to you guys. Where do people go to learn more about it?
Yeah, you can go to republic.co/Sapient, or you can visit our website, sapient.industries.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Sam.
Thanks, Chris.
Of course. Take care. Alrighty, we are going to come back after this break here and have, this looks like another pitch, and then we'll talk to Procurify. Welcome back to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on this show, Joe, the CEO of Pen Pal Schools. If you were listening on my Facebook page, which you probably weren't because there's only like three people listening, no, not Go Irish, Matt Furman. That's who just said Go Irish, and that's no deal. Go Marquette. So we're going to have Joe on to talk about Pen Pal Schools. I was just mentioning the fact that I'm going to try to not be too hard on traditional schools and traditional schooling, given all of the college admission stuff. And I want to focus on the positives that exist. With an example here, Joe with Pen Pal School. So, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. I don't even have to say it. I just said it like before we came back on the air. I have a beef with traditional education and how it's misused, and sort of like we use these weird barriers to stop everyone else from being able to gain access to information, content, and learning, which if you're technologically savvy at all, you know that most of the content in the world is already available. So like it's kind of BS. But to have someone who creates a place where the globe can learn and access information, and more importantly, get outside of school politics and an agenda and actually try to solve some real world problems, to me is a really interesting opportunity. And so I thought it was really cool when I saw what you guys were up to. And then I saw that you guys were raising on Republic. So anyone listening here can invest. You guys have raised a little over $50,000 so far. And you've got a lot of time left, 45 days. So what I want to do is have you just give a one-minute pitch about what the problem is you're trying to solve, how you solve it, and how you make us money.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do so. And we've actually, we started the Republic raise $50,000 there. We've raised $1.5 million from a great group of investors and are well on our way. We've got over a quarter million students in 150 countries already on our platform and have become profitable. But putting the cart before the horse here, what do? We're solving a problem that anybody who's been through school is familiar with, which is that schoolwork is boring. It's not authentic and therefore not engaging, right? How often does a student ask, why are we learning this? And we're actually solving that problem, and we're doing it with authenticity. We are connecting students with peers around the world to learn together. They're not just memorizing facts to regurgitate them on a test. They are actually collaborating with peers around the world to use their knowledge and apply to problems and issues that are meaningful to them. So we make learning more engaging and more authentic, so students are therefore more motivated and they learn better. And then we make money because schools spend over $12 billion in the U.S. alone a year on instructional materials, exactly like Pen Pal Schools. So there's room in their budget for us, and those budgets are shifting every year more away from textbooks and more towards online instructional materials, just like Pen Pal School. So we're already profitable through that first business model alone.
Very cool. So tell me a little bit about how you got to trying to solve for this, because I feel like the position that you guys take is unique, and that it's not just addressing like it's not English lit. It's like solving global problems.
Yeah. So, you know, we're a learning company, and we mean that not only in that helping students to learn, but we are always learning. And that's my background as a product manager. So, what I started it to do is very different from what it does today because we've learned so much. When we started, it was about connecting kids to learn about current events and different issues. Basically, you know, I was just amazed that students are just not connected at a young age. You look at the thousands of ways that we as adults are connected on all our different apps. Well, if you're under age 13, you can't legally use Facebook or Instagram or any of these social media sites. So it's just struck me as a giant, you know, hole, and it was bizarre that no one else had done it before. And so we started connecting students to learn about different cultures and current events and kind of what you might think kids would talk about if you get connected. And what we quickly discovered, we went through school, so we started going through schools. What teachers told us was, hey, this is amazing. Our students are really interested in this. But it's not just that they're interested in learning about different parts of the world. We are seeing their quality of their writing just go way through the roof, because it's authentic. They're not just writing to their teacher, to no one, as they've been doing for their whole lives. Turns out if you give them someone real to write to, they actually care more about their writing. So teacher said, can you do more on, you know, civil rights? Can you do stuff on the environment? Can you do science and social studies? And then they started asking for art and math and foreign languages. And so we really expanded everything that we do, because we learned we didn't just create a better way for students to learn about the world. We created a better way for students to learn in general, which is authentic connections, and that's incredibly powerful.
Very cool. I love this story. I wish we had more time for it, but traditional radio and sponsorship require that I take a commercial break. Where do people go and learn more about Pen Pal Schools and get more information on what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so our website is penpalschools.com. That's easy enough. And then we have this awesome crowdfunding campaign going with a lot more details on the financial model, how we've already become profitable, and our big plans for the future. That's at republic.co/penpal-schools. There's a little dash in there between the Pen Pal and schools.
Yep, and just so people know, you're connected. You've connected 320,000 students over 7,000 schools and 150 companies. So you guys are going strong. Awesome. Thank you so much for taking
8,000 schools now, growing.
8,000. You're growing while we're on the show. 9,000. We're right on the show. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
All right. Take care. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host Scott Catoon. Fresh hot coffee now. I took a sip of the cold coffee, and that was no bueno. We've got a bunch of texts from people listening to this show. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you too, Angelo. Ryan Annisberger, my guy, is watching us on the stream. I'm Facebooking this right now, which is not something I usually do, but I figured I had time, so what the hell. So we've got a call in. This is me shouting out in case he's listening. I'm on man. You're supposed to be calling in right now, Procurify. We'd be talking to the CEO and founder of Procurify right this minute if he was listening, but he's going to have to call in, so we'll have to delay this for a second. But that's fine. I can talk about the random live stream and all the text messages that I just got on our stream here for people listening to the show via the internet. Apparently, there's been a bunch of Trojan condom commercials, which I just want to be clear. Those aren't mine. I don't have a sponsorship relationship with, what's up, my man, with Trojan condom or any condom or like Roman or any ED, any, like, that's not my demographic. And so I'm not really sure why it's been on repeat there, but it is hilarious nonetheless. Yet another reason for y'all to tune into the podcast and listen to, you know, an uninterrupted version of this show. But anyway, I digress. We had to wrap it up really quickly, so oh my God, did I just say that? What a pun. Trojan condoms brought to you by, we got to wrap it up really quickly. What I'm getting at is Pen Pal Schools, another terrible segue. I wanted to talk more with Joe about this, and I'm just going to fill in some blanks here because it had to be really quick as we wrapped up for commercial. They are crushing it. 78 paying schools and districts, average deal is $1,700 a year, named best education technology of 2017 by Barack Obama and folks the year before that, or 2 years before that, recognized by Obama as leading social enterprise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, doing a really, really great job. What I love about this is both media and education. One of the biggest problems that I see is the biases that I don't know. I feel like they always existed. I don't think it's new. But now because of social media and because of streaming and because of all of these type of things, we've gotten to a spot where like they're out there and they're obvious and people can share it. People can experience something and be like, boom, that's it. And the schools have kind of, I guess the veil is lifted, which I think is bad in the short term because it creates sort of chaos, but it's great in the long term because chaos makes you have to change whether you want to or not. And I just think politically and educationally and healthcare too, it's time to make some things change and hold some people responsible. I think that groups like Pen Pal Schools, which is just one version of one thing, I think that they have a huge opportunity to not only make learning ubiquitous across the world for, if not free, for something, you know, a nominal cost, at least a place where you don't pay $500,000 to get your spoiled kid into a program because they want to learn. There are actually people out there. It may not be Aunt Becky's kid, but there are people out there who go to school to actually learn. They want to try to change the world. Anyway, getting way off top. I go down rabbit holes. This is a problem. But to get back on point, the idea that Pen Pal Schools allows people to look into and learn around and about and try to solve problems that education institutions and political institutions don't want to touch, environment as one in particular, political situations, fake news as an example. One of the reasons that they don't want to touch it is because it can be, how do we want to put this, not in their best interest financially. A lot of their boosters run major companies. That's why they have the money to put their name on buildings and buy their way in. Having kids collaborate online globally to try to address human rights issues, to try to create robotic technology and AI, things that may not be in the best interest of whoever the benefactors are of these universities and these institutions, I think it's a good thing. I think it removes bias. I think it's like, you know, what Medium, you know, set out to be the platform. Now it's sort of lost its way with this whole $5 subscription. But like the way that it came in was to disconnect the content source, the engine, from the people who benefited from the loudest noises. And so someone could do their own research and write and produce and publish their findings on things based not on whether or not they've been paid for it, but rather, would it be in the best interest of you to know it? Educationally, if I am basically solely judged on whether or not I got you a job, any job, versus I was benefited by making the most well-rounded, most educated person, I obviously am going to choose whichever one is going to have the most money and the most good. And if it doesn't have good, it's got money, I'm taking money. And so the idea that there's all these different programs, and this is one of the reasons I like Coursera as an example. Coursera allows people to learn anything they want. Now, is it as good as being in the classroom? No. Is it as good as having direct in-person interaction and having access to, you know, all of the fresh research? No, but the reality is the internet makes it to where the minute something's published, it's available across the globe. So you don't need to be there. What PenPal does is actually let you connect and collaborate online, which I agree is not as good as in person. But it lets you at least compare notes and connect with individuals. I'll share a complete tangent story, and then we got to take a quick break here. I was talking to a couple founders, one of which, actually, this is a great timing for this because of this unfortunate, ridiculous tragedy that took place in New Zealand. A company called Aegis AI was on my podcast, and Sonny, who's one of the co-founder, the whole point of the company is basically to create an AI over top of video cameras that are in buildings so that if the moment someone pulls out a firearm, it immediately alerts police that there's an active shooter, tells them where they are so that they can coordinate and immediately go get them instead of walking in blind and getting shot. We talked about the tragedy in Aurora here locally and how this could have, if not prevented it, you really can't prevent it, but they could absolutely cut down on the response time. Okay, anyway, Sonny was having a conversation on the internet with another person who he met randomly, Ben, his co-founder, and they were collaborating on information around how could one create a software that could potentially solve or at least contribute to the solution to ending gun violence, at least mass shootings. Didn't know Ben at all, but they collaborated over shared information and ultimately have become co-founders and now in the process of raising $1.5 million to build a piece of technology that will hopefully make what happened yesterday not happen anymore. And, you know, whether they will or not is not the point. The point is that the opportunity would not have existed if there weren't collaborative tools online and a place for two people to meet and compare notes. So that is the reason that I am constantly harping on the education thing. I think we've gotten to a place where the world is so spread out and everyone still knows each other. And Facebook and all these social media platforms, I hate them, but I also love them because they do connect people for good, even though sometimes it's for bad. So without any more harping on this sort of thing, I do think that if nothing else, you should go check out PenPal and you should check out some of these other places because it's super interesting stuff that we're entering into a world where an entire globe could have access to 4G phone data, Facebook, and thus have access to educational tools for nothing, for no cost, basically, which is incredible. I'm going to take a quick break, and we will be back after this, hopefully with Amon. If not, I'm just going to keep jarring on, and you can follow me on my Facebook channel right now and be one of the only two people listening. So I'm Scott Catoon. This is WGN Radio, AM 720. Boom. Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Scott Catoon. Amon, my friend, are you on the show now? Procureify. Is Amon there? Do we have him? Hey, Amon, how you doing?
Good. Hi, Scott.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. So, I'm excited to talk to you about Procureify because we've had a couple of early stage companies call in prior to your call here, and they're both in areas that have nothing to do with your business, but at the same time, model-wise and sort of value prop-wise are very in sync with your business. So to see where you guys are much further along the road here, I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. The main gist of the previous callers was around, like, making a better use of energy, time, and money And particularly from a business standpoint of, like, it's one thing to like, have an objective or a budget. It's another thing to know where that money goes, and it's yet another thing to know which of those expenditures actually are valuable and, like, how to continue to spend, not just, like, wisely, but also spend in the, you know, not feel fearful of taking risks. Does that make sense?
That's pretty spot on.
Well, if you're hiring, I'm happy to join the team.
Well, I think you just pitched the entire company for us right there, so I appreciate that.
No, so tell me more specifically, like, how I, as a business operator, can use your business.
It was very interesting. I mean, you touched on, you know, three kind of segmentations of spend or the idea of that, but it's really about the culture. And at the end, Root, you just said it, which was take risk, but spend wisely. And it's always, I think, a crossroads between decision making and, you know, understanding what are the decisions you can take risks with. And so for us, you know, spend is always this enigma of, like, fear or, you know, money being spent in an organization. Like, there's always some challenge with that or some control that has to be on that. So I think it just inherently, risk is more difficult when you're thinking about spending money. So for us, we really try to accumulate that idea and really transform it into what we call spend culture. That, you know, the culture of the organization and how they want to proceed, either growth or sustainability, really should define the decisions around spend. And so for us, building a platform that allows you to kind of configure, you know, whatever real nature of your organization is, but at the end result, from the point in which you want to make a decision to when it's executed, is all managed through this platform that allows you to take risks, have accountability and structure, that at the end of the day, you know, at the best feasible decision point, you are doing your inherent best. So
no,
we really
I
focus.
I totally get that. I just want to, like, so have you read the book From Good to Great by Jim Collins?
Yeah.
So yes, I'm a little bit behind the curve. For whatever reason, I missed that book a ways ago. And I was in his other book, Flywheel, and I went backwards. But if anyone's listening, you should check out the book. It's great. One of the things that he talks about in the middle of it that reminds me of what you just said is, so there's, like, the level four and the level five leader, and, like, there's these charismatic take over a company and they just spend wildly. And for the longest time, there was no real way to prove them wrong and to say, like, when you take over a company, you don't need to just spend wildly to make yourself look like something that you want to be. You can prove that these expenditures are good and these are not, and that when you're, you know, it's sort of like when you're having a slump, you know, winning cures everything. And sometimes that gets taken too seriously, and CEOs and leaders will just, like, try to spend their way out of a slump, and they don't have the numbers to know, like, is this a good spender? Like, there are all kinds of things that I feel like we're just now getting into with businesses like Procurify that actually put like a numerical value to not just spend, but output, and that ultimately, similar to the conversation I had with our first call in Sapient, it actually has a huge impact on the way that people behave inside of the business.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about the culture part of this.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, today software has changed, and the idea of software for internal business use, you know, used to be actually really was focused on control, just because the dynamics of, you know, the workforce and the hardware that was available within it. So, you know, you were stagnant at your desk. There was no mobile phones. But today, software is really about one thing: magnify the role of the individual. It should be able to provide a 10x output. When you're using technology, the right software, the right system, it should magnify the individual's impact to the organization. And it's really what we focus on for the culture, is remove and eliminate the mindset of fear on decision making, and don't create bottlenecks. Or, you know, what happens is if you make a mistake with spend and you have no system in place, you put a policy. And again, you make a mistake and you put another policy. And over time, you start to realize all you've created is this bureaucratic, fear-based system internally in your organization where people don't make decisions, where the decision to be made takes forever. It no longer provides that value of quick decision-making and the impact to the organization and supporting it. It's really about all these you know, really, really clustered in policy control, which just create bottlenecks throughout the organization. So the culture mindset is really about not creating or inherently creating these blockers to decision making, but removing those obstacles as a leader. That is your fundamental goal, is remove the obstacles for decisions to be made, and obviously start learning from those decisions that continuously be made, but do not create policies because you don't have a proper process or system in place to manage that. Does that make sense?
It makes 100% sense. In fact, I want to double down on it. I mean, we only have a couple minutes, so I'm going to try to make it quick and short here. But the thing that I preach to founders all the time, and also large companies that we've worked with in the past, the reality is I try to get everything down to unit economics, because if I can find the levers that I need to pull, I have as much control as I humanly can. And when I look at what you guys are doing, and you talk about the spend, I think, and the culture around it, I think that there's this sort of like apprehension for people to put a valuation on not just the spend on like R&D, but like on human capital. People, you know, again, really alluding to the book, like people, it's not just people, it's the right people that you have on a team. And I think that you can identify, in particular using Procurify, this is one of the things I thought was a big value. I think you can identify, you know, X number of individuals, X number of teams, X number of dollars spent on these things. It might be a return of 50, 60, 75 cents on the dollar, which is not good, versus other teams and other initiatives that are $1.30 or $1.40 return on every dollar spent on that employee. And ultimately, it helps you know not to fire, but should I lend more support to this unit, or should I withdraw some support, or are there ways to reconfigure the seating arrangement? I don't mean literally, but like who's on which team to take the most value. And that's the part that you're uncovering that I think leaders in the past had to rely on a gut check.
You are 100% correct. So I really need to bring you on our team here, because that is the inherent truth of it. You're really not here to manage the mistakes. You're actually here to support the confidence and the growth of your team, and understanding that every decision is just a data point to make the next best decision.
You're so right.
And by creating a system around that where you can centralize all that data, you can then start to make just more efficient and smart decisions for your organization to grow stronger.
Which further proves the point why people should not be afraid of tech, the AI and all this stuff, the conversation around it's going to take our jobs. It's just not actually the best value.
No.
It's actually about making us better decision makers, better, stronger, faster, which ultimately is great.
Beautifully said. Yes, 100%. Better decision makers. That's the point.
And you guys have built an awesome piece of software to help address that. So tell people where they can go to learn more about this and get in touch with you guys.
Oh, I appreciate that. I mean, you can Google spend culture and take your own quiz on understanding what your organization runs like. And you can at procurify.spendculture.com. You can also go to procurify.com and learn more about us there. And if you're ever interested in joining Scott on your side, I'd love to see you on our careers page and see if there's anything that fits your fancy.
I've got quite a business going on already, but I would love to connect with you offline about this, because I'm fascinated. I think when I'm done, I'm gonna take the spend culture test and share it with people. I'll put it on our Facebook page at Technori, and people can check it out, because I really do think it's a hugely important part of scaling a business. So Aman, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much, Scott. Really appreciate it, and really appreciate the thoughtful questions and discussion.
Of course. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All righty, folks. We're going to take one more break, come back with my good friend Dane Neal, and hit the news.